Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Satsang with G. I am totally delighted that you're here with me. It has been it's been such a great time putting this all together. I'm now getting into the swing of things so that when Doug calls me to be ready to start the show, I'm actually ready. The first time we had feedback and loops and echoes and all sorts of things. So you may even have heard that on the, even if you're just listening on the BBS radio network. But we're also broadcasting live on Facebook, and we are also live on YouTube Live, where I am monitoring the conversation. I'm monitoring the comments. So by all means, you can call in, and the number to call in to ask questions is, let me back up here, 888-627-6008. And those of you who may be listening on Facebook and YouTube who may want to call in, to just listen, it's 605-475-1600. But by all means, do call in with your questions. That's my favorite part of the show. I have, I obviously get questions and in fact, maybe some of you even saw a video I did a long time ago. In the 2 years between when I did the old show Conversations with G and started this one, I actually had a stack about an inch and a half high of all of the emails that had come in for me to answer. So obviously I can't answer them all. But nonetheless, I want to thank you all. I've named this particular episode. I like to pick a subject, although, you know, we can go any direction anybody would like, you know, depending on what the comments are, what the questions are, what the call-in people have to ask. We can go any direction you'd like, anything that means something to you. But I like to pick a theme just because it looks better as a title not of the show, because we're going to have to pick one anyway. But also because it gives me an opportunity to just kind of bring up a subject that maybe people don't think about very often, which is why I brought up unconditional happiness, which is not something people give much thought to. Most people don't even know such a thing is possible. And this time, it was equally provocative. It's called Anchored. Yes, very good. All right. Just when you think you have all the technology all worked out and everything perfect, something goes wrong. So I'm back to having to sit in one position and being very good about it. So sorry for the little interruption. Those of you are on the radio, we had a little technical thing happen, and these things happen. So anyway, as I was saying, anchored in the timeless. That was definitely not the timeless, because what we experience in our everyday life is everything that comes and goes. And I'd be willing to wager you any amount of money that you spend pretty much the greater part of your day, if not all of your day, trying to stabilize things in your life to keep them from changing, which is kind of funny, because everything in our life is constantly changing. You realize life itself is not possible without constant change. Your body is constantly killing off and regrowing new cells, like to the tune of a million a second. So in the amount of time we've already been talking, there's literally been tens of millions of your cells that have just died, and new ones reborn, or just born, right? New ones created. And this process of regeneration eventually wears out. That's what's called old age. And eventually it gives up, which is called death, which life also likes because it doesn't want the same model to persist. It's a great deal like a car company, right? They don't want the same models. There's some classics they'd like to keep around. But for the most part, we want to get the new models going. And so, you know, we got the best out of you, we've put that into your progeny, hopefully, and so you can move on now. That's really the way life functions. It's really kind of funny. It doesn't have a whole lot of regard for you personally, just your role in the whole. I hope that this is a spiritual show, and it sounds kind of cynical for me to say things like that, but it isn't really cynical because if we're ever really going to discover the truth of who we are, the reality of being, the genuine spirit, the genuine immortality, we're going to have to find it in the timeless. You know, we're all so identified with our bodies and our minds that we think that this constant change is actually, you know, the body is changing. We say, I'm changing, you know. I'm just not the same as I was. I'm, you know, my memory just isn't good as it was. I used to be stronger. I used to be fitter. I used to be better looking, you know. Or, you know, when you're younger, I can't wait to be older, and then I'll be smarter, and then I'll have my own life, and I can do what I want, and things like that. We're forever looking at that which is inevitably changing, hoping to kind of secure it in some way to find the changeless. And it never works because it's always changing. So is there a place within us or without us, anywhere at all, that is actually changeless, timeless, beyond all of the change? Well, I think we have a hint. There's a hint right in the very experience that we're having, right in the heart and soul of the experience that we're having. Because let's say you're older and you recognize that your memory isn't what it used to be. I've had that experience. You know, my mind used to be a lot quicker than it was. Not to mention my face used to look a lot different. You know, you might be able to see a picture from 20 years ago or 50 years ago and say, yeah, it's probably the same model. It's the same model, definitely not the same vintage. But it's not the same, right? And it's been changing every day, actually. So, but right in the midst of that, and I don't care if you've lived, you know, 10 years of your life or if you've lived 100 years, you can look back on your life and see, well, things aren't the same now as they were then. Well, what is it that notices that this and this are not the same? Is it just a comparison in memory? Or is there, because memory is totally faulty, by the way. I mean, the evidence is in that we don't really remember stuff. We remember snippets, and then we make up a story to go with it. That's a whole show in and of itself. It's very fascinating to look into. But memory is very faulty. It's always revisionist. It's always reinterpreting experience from this moment. But what is it that notices the change? Whenever anything changes, you know, whenever an expression changes. You know, if you walk into a jeweler to buy a diamond, you know, say you're looking for your engagement ring, you know, you're going to surprise her or something, you know, and they don't take out a diamond and just set it in a pile of rocks or, you know, other diamonds and stuff, right? Because you can't notice it. They take it and they put it on a big black or deep blue velvet pad, so it's the only thing there. An environment that's completely opposite of it. And with that absolutely opposite background sitting behind it, suddenly every facet of that diamond becomes visible. In fact, if you were walking down the street and you saw a little glimmer of a diamond that was just sitting in a pile of rubble or, you know, trash or something, you may not even pay any attention to it whatsoever. You may not know that you just walked by a diamond. You would figure it was some kind of glass, you know. I mean, obviously, a diamond wouldn't be sitting in a pile of rubble, right? The fact is, you wouldn't see it. But if it was sitting there on this black velvet pad on the sidewalk, you sure would notice it, right? So we see things because we already have a context. There's a background that's always there that is seeing from the point of view of that background, which makes everything in your life stand out. I mean, isn't that why people practice meditation so they can get to that state of the, you know, the quiet mind, right? And if you've ever experienced the quiet mind and all of a sudden the noise starts again, it's quite jarring, right? Or even you're sitting in a room by yourself, you know, and it's quiet. Maybe there's just a hum of an air conditioner and all of a sudden there's shouting or something from the outside. It really gets your attention. You notice it. And yet, if there was nothing but shouting and there's a party and music playing, you'd eventually just kind of shut it out. You wouldn't hear it. Everything that we experience requires there be something back there that is quite quiet, quite silent, really. If you're listening to music, you can't listen to five pieces of music at the same time, nor can you listen to music with jackhammers going. In order to hear the music, you have to be listening from a place of silence. And the more silent, the better. There's nothing more annoying than being in a concert or a movie or something and somebody starts talking right in the middle of it. Totally, totally distracting. Yet if you were sitting in a restaurant, everybody around you could be talking and you wouldn't hear any of it. Are you grasping what I'm trying to convey here to you? Everything you've ever experienced, every bit of change that you've seen happen in your life, there's been something that has noticed and monitored and registered that change. And so the big question is, whatever's noticing it, is that changing? And again, this is satsang. This is not a lecture. In satsang, you're always invited to look for yourself. Is what is noticing the change itself changing? Now, we have all sorts of ideas about ourselves. I totally agree. I think of myself as being part of this change, that I'm this body and all these changes have happened to me. But maybe that's just kind of a conventional way of looking at it, and maybe it's just not right. maybe it's dead wrong, as a matter of fact. Maybe it's something we really need to look at. Matter of fact, I'd highly recommend that we do. I'm inviting you to look at that now. The consciousness that is aware of everything that's happened in your life, has that actually been any different? Has that changed in the slightest? Even though absolutely everything is changing in your life constantly, including the body itself at the rate of a million cells a second. Look at the consciousness. Look at that which is aware of the change. Now, this is not something we normally do. This is not something we get invited to do. The only time you're ever invited is if you get to come to satsang. That's the only place where you hear these kinds of questions asked. Because it's the only place that is more interested in who is aware of what's going on than of the what that's going on. It's more interested in the ocean than in the waves, more interested in the ocean than the fish, more interested in the forest than the tree, to see the entire picture, the holistic view, the entire range of experience. Check to see if we have any questions popping up.
sometimes I have to scroll a little bit. I'm not sure enough. Where's the chat? There we go. There's the chat. Let's move you over a little bit. Let's see. Hi, nice to see you from London here. Namaste, GP.
Now, for 6 hours in satsang with Muji, and now you. Today is invited time. Oh, Ronnie, well, with Muji, well, actually, I was too before I came here. So we're in it together, and I'm actually honored that you would, come in and sit with me. This Indus River, beautiful name. What does the timeless feel like? How does timeless feel? Timeless doesn't feel like anything. Timeless is what feels. I mean, what does the inside of your mouth taste like? It can't have a feeling because feeling is an undulation of consciousness that is experienced. It's like the wave on the ocean, right? In order to feel, which of course we do in abundance, we think in abundance, we have sensations in abundance, we emote in abundance, there's nothing odd about that, there's nothing off about that. But but in order to have that, there must be the component, the element, the essence, the background that is aware of it. And that itself cannot be something that is felt, because if it was, then it would be within the range, then what was perceiving it? If it was being felt, then where is the feeling of timeless being registered? The timeless and consciousness are one and the same. And if you look really close, you'll see that you're that consciousness. So that you are the timeless. But we have so identified with what we are experiencing, which is natural for us, right? I mean, experience it fills the screen, right? When you're in a movie, you don't go in a movie to just sit there and go, it's a movie, I don't really care. You go into the movie to be completely involved in it. I mean, you paid your 10 bucks or 20 bucks if you're in London, and you're sitting in that movie and damn it, I'm going to be in that movie. So you emote and you feel and everything, right? I mean, you forget that it's a movie, and yet all of it is just playing in your mind. All of it is triggering emotions, and nothing of what you're seeing is absolute. But you are. So it's a matter of coming to see that which is doing the experiencing itself cannot be experienced because it isn't an experience. I mean, if you're aware of your thoughts, you can't be a thought. So you can't think yourself, right? Which means our normal definition of human knowledge is kind of out to lunch a bit. Because that's all that version of knowledge is all based on description and comparison and the like, which is really valuable, right? I mean, we sit in a world that's full of all sorts of the inventions of knowledge, which is great. Wonderful. Matter of fact, I'm sitting in the midst of it, made this whole thing possible, you know, with a producer in California and people all over the world listening. It's like, whoa, this is pretty amazing. But the missing part of the equation is that which is actually experiencing it. And the only reason it seems difficult to know yourself that as you are, to have the awakening as to who you are, is because of our habit of trying to find ourselves as some kind of an object rather than that which is aware of objects, which by definition can't be an object. So how does the timeless feel in and of itself? Nothing. It's like the black velvet background. Does it feel the diamond? Yes, it does. But is it feeling itself? No. It is what allows everything to be felt, the absolutely silent background. That's you. You are the timeless. And so when I use a word like anchored in the timeless, it only means that our sense of identity, the sense of I, stops identifying with what it's seeing and begins to identify with the one who's seeing, even though it can't be seen directly. It's kind of like, you know, the black hole in space, right? As I understand it, our entire galaxy, right? Galaxy, big, you know, is orbiting around a black hole. A black hole can't be seen. Matter of fact, it didn't exist. There was theoretical ideas that such a thing was possible. But how they discovered the black holes in space is by noticing that what was supposed to be there wasn't. It was an aberration that they noticed because it itself cannot be seen. So the idea of something really having real, tangible existence but yet not be palpable, to understandable or perceivable by the senses, is not as out there as people might think. I'm just insisting that the ultimate of that is consciousness. Consciousness is that, and consciousness is you. Consciousness isn't just a theoretical thing, it's actually you. That's the better. The personal name for consciousness is I. I, not identified with a body. Hold on a second. Okay, this is from Claudia. Hello. I've heard many spiritual teachers say that we cannot be our mind thoughts because we are the observer. It's very confusing to me. Can't the brain be aware of itself? That, you know, Claudia, I'm so glad you asked that question because it's not an easy one to ask because what we're doing to answer. It's an easy one to ask, right? Well, it's only an easy one to ask when you've actually had enough maturity to think that such a question is important, which you clearly do. I'm always slow to answer these questions because I kind of want to sneak up on them from behind, because obviously we are perceiving, right? And the explanation that what we're perceiving is in fact just, you know, the hologram going on inside the brain is quite a legitimate one. As a matter of fact, if you look at the neurology and the science behind perception, you'll see that what the only thing we ever do experience is this image in the brain. But it points to a very interesting phenomenon, and that is, what then, if that's all we're ever perceiving, then the brain that we're referring to is also one of those images. I mean, we can't escape from it. We can't escape from the fact that we have perceptions of all of these things. Now, what it comes down to is exploring your own experience. The spiritual path is not intellectual. Right. So what you have here are two competing theories. There's the matter model of existence and there's the consciousness model of existence. And I've come down on the side of the consciousness model of existence. And the reason I have is because while I cannot step outside of perceiving to validate that what I'm perceiving exists independently from me, I know for a fact everything is appearing within consciousness, and that if consciousness was not here, I would not exist. This universe would not exist, at least as far as I was concerned. So the I that is experiencing is consciousness. And that means that what I'm experiencing either is a material world and consciousness is the leading theory in science, is that consciousness is an emergent property of the complexity of matter, that over billions of years, matter got so complex that it became self-aware. I would ask you to probe that question yourself. When I do, I find that my sense of awareness has a qualitative difference about it. That sense of consciousness. And that to even challenge it intellectually, it's like something that is completely dead, inert, unconscious, through some magic formula, becomes consciousness. And that is, in fact, what is being said. Completely dead, inert, unconscious matter becomes self-aware matter. So from unconsciousness, consciousness has sprung. To me, that's irrational. It makes no sense. Combine that with my own intuitive sense that there's something different about consciousness. And then I realize that my entire experience is nothing but consciousness. I cannot step outside of consciousness to perceive anything, to verify if something exists independently of it. I am completely contained within it. Everything appears and disappears within it. Why is it so difficult to say, you know what? I think everything is consciousness. I think matter emerged from consciousness, what we call matter, that the concrete form emerged from consciousness. As Buddha said, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. To me, it makes intuitive sense, and the more I just be with it, and I just go into my feeling of existence itself, just a pure being, the more convinced I am that my experience of consciousness is more true than my belief in an objective universe. So I hope that at least opens up the subject. I don't want to give you an answer, say, well, this is what it is. I really love people to explore this for themselves, because it's the most important question you can ask, Claudia. How do you tell the difference? Well, that's the inner exploration. I mean, every scientist has the same feeling. You know, all the stuff that there's all sorts of aspects of Einstein's theory of relativity that are just now being proven, because we finally gotten to the point where we can have the experimental apparatus to be able to put them to the test. But Einstein had none of that. He simply perceived it. Before it could actually be proven, according to the scientific method. So I invite you to become the real scientist and say, they don't seem to be compatible, and the material explanation just doesn't satisfy me. So I've sided with the consciousness only model of the universe. It's simply my experience. Thank you for that. That was wonderful. What a joy. Okay, this is from Dryfield, the consciousness does not appear to change, but does the unconscious shape that which is noticed by the consciousness, but does the unconscious shape that which is noticed by the consciousness? If so, is the consciousness truly unchanging? Good boy, I'm getting really great questions today. This is really fun. Thank you, Dryfield. It'd be fun to really know people's names, but saying their handles is great. Well, I think, Claudia, that's probably your name. The consciousness does not appear to change. Good. Does the unconscious shape that which is noticed by the consciousness, does that change? If so, again, I would invite you to go to your experience, because if I look back on my entire life, and I get anybody to look back on their entire life, everything you've perceived has been changing. Some things slowly, some things quickly, but everything has been changing. Some things changed sometimes patterns that went on for years, boom, disappeared suddenly. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the perceived worse. But has the act of perceiving, has the sense of perceiving it, the knowing of it, has that changed? Right. Now, you're saying that does not appear to have changed. But does the unconscious, that which is shaping what is formed, can that change? Well, it opens up a very interesting thing, because the consciousness, if I take what I was just talking about with Claudia and I extend it, the consciousness-only model of the universe, it means that the universe isn't made of matter. It is made of consciousness. So it just doesn't appear to consciousness or in consciousness. It's made of consciousness. The consciousness is actually the very substance of things, the way the wave is made of the ocean. It is the very nature of the ocean itself that produces waves and fish and the plants and shores and all of it. It is the nature of the ocean itself. Of course, we expand, we see it's the nature of the planet, the nature of the sun, and it just keeps going and going and going until we finally get to what it is the nature of. That ultimate nature of things is what people have called God. But the sages throughout the ages have said that God is the conscious awareness. Does it shape it? When a question like that is asked, it's usually coming from a point of view that the creation is some kind of act of will. And in fact, if you hear people talk about God creating, it's an act of will, an act that takes place in time, and that God did it at some particular point in time. But I see it more as like, you know, when a dog wags its tail, it's not an act of will. When you blink, it's not an act of will. When you grow your hair, it's not an act of will. It is just the functioning of nature itself. The appearance of form is the nature of consciousness. So while we examine consciousness and we detach it from what it's seeing in order to get a sense of ourselves as not being what I'm perceiving, ultimately the entire thing turns back around. It's called the inward facing path and the outward facing path, or the Vedantic path, which is the path of inquiry, which is, or neti neti, or in the mystic tradition, Christian, it was called via negativa, where I am not that. And you keep going until there's absolutely nothing left that you're perceiving that you identify with you and what you're left with. And there must be something left is the pure awareness that is you. But that's not the end of the road, is it? Because all right, I'm not any of those things, and I feel an enormous sense of peace, and I feel a sense of grace and beauty and wonder, and there's just a stillness. And yet experience continues. There's still sensations and feelings and emotions. It's all still happening, right? So now the question becomes, well, what is that? And that is what's called the tantric path. That is where that sense of being, that pure consciousness, begins to embrace as itself everything that's being seen. So it isn't an act of will. I think I'm going to make something now. That's kind of the human way. That's the narrow, what it's been narrowed down to is it's appeared as a human being. But in fact, it's a spontaneous happening, because I mean, you didn't decide you were going to look the way you did. And I mean, some people say you did in between lives. You have a little checklist and you plan it all out. We have no real evidence for that. As far as we know, you know, all sorts of things happen in your life all the time that you have nothing to do with. I mean, the very fact that the universe is even here, right? The spontaneous thing, this spontaneous universe happened. And there's no explanation for the Big Bang. Just, you know, this moment when something happened and time began. What happened before time began? I mean, we can't go there. It's outside the realm of what the mind can know. So let's just go with what we do know, right? I am here. I am conscious. I am experiencing. And the relationship that I have to what I'm experiencing must be very deep and intimate and genuine. And ultimately you will see that it is nothing more than your infinite self-image. The person you think you are is a finite self-image. It's a sense of me that is very narrow. It's a person and it's related to the body, and I'm male, and I'm, you know, so old, and I live here, and I do these things, and I've had these experiences, and I have these memories, which is a very, you know, it's a little prison we put ourselves into. But it's reflective of the reality that consciousness, simply being aware of itself, produces a universe. This is the I am-ness, which is the firstborn of the ultimate absolute. So I hope that answers your question. If we look for creation as a spontaneous event happening in the moment and not a point in time, keeping with our theme of the timeless, not something that happened in a moment, but something that is happening constantly, just the way the body is regenerating constantly, we'll see that creation isn't a thing, that it isn't an act of will, that it is the very nature of consciousness itself. And that nature of consciousness itself, when it takes form, we call that life, existence, beingness, the universe, and everything that goes on in it. And when it's seen as it really is, it's just staggeringly beautiful, because it is the reflection of the absolute purity of oneness. which opens the door to the full range of experience. I had a question the other day about, you know, emptiness and there's nothing there and there's nobody there. And it's like, oh, gee, please, not again. No, everything is here. It's just not separate from you. All the beauty, all the love, all the intimacy, all the fun, all the joy, all of it. But now it's a reflection of you and not something you have to chase. Let's see what else we got here. Ah, Shanika. Namaste, Walsh. I really enjoy your videos simply because I find it easier to understand. I've read so many spiritual books, but only through your videos, it's made all clear. Well, thank you. That's really good to hear, because I that's what I strive for. It's good to know that I'm accomplishing it. My question is, what happens to people when they get dementia? What happens to their consciousness? What happens to your consciousness when you get the flu, when you get sick? I mean, when you're sick, it takes over, right? It takes over the body, sucks the energy out of it. Because it's in its defensive posture now. There's a little critter in there that doesn't belong there, and it's taking all the extra energy. It's raising the temperature. It's creating more blood cells to surround it. You know, we got them surrounded and, you know, escorted out of the body. We feel that is nasty stuff coming out of us, coming out of every pore of us. We smell bad, and, you know, we have no energy, and it's hot and all that, right? I mean, it means everything is functioning normally. It means you're healthy. It means things are good, right? So you're cool, right? So in that state, right, that is the state through which you see the world. It means the world appears differently to you. It means there's a different picture in front of consciousness. If for some reason you are reborn, you come back in another life as a mosquito, right? You are going to feel like a mosquito. You're going to act like a mosquito. You're going to buzz. You're not going to talk. You're going to be seeking out, trying to sample people's blood. People are going to get annoyed. You're not going to have a very long life. It's going to last one season tops, right? The world will be the mosquito's world to you. Yet the consciousness has the potential for being a human. It actually has the potential for being a Buddha, which means there is no sense of consciousness being confined to what it is conscious of. So when the mechanism of the body breaks down to an extreme like dementia, I mean, it's no different. I'm 65 years old. My brain does not work as well as it did. I don't remember things as well as I used to. It's certainly not as fast as it was or as clever, right? But all that means is that the mechanism through which I am experiencing isn't experiencing in the same way. The movie on the screen is different. The viewer of the screen remains absolutely the same. Now, if you're with somebody or taking care of like a family member who has dementia, they don't need your sympathy. You know, they are still quite conscious. They're in their world. They just cannot identify with their world anymore because of what? They've forgotten who they are in the world. Now, is that such a bad thing? The identity they had of themselves before that is gone. They're not that anymore. Now, we look on the outside, from the outside, and we see them, you know, doing weird stuff and wandering around, and we have to keep them from hurting themselves like children. So we have this, you know, so we feel sorry for them, we want to do things for them, and yeah, we have to protect them. But don't pity them. Recognize that no matter what the experience they're having is, the one having the experience remains unchanged, and the experience is temporary. If you actually approach it with that, two things will happen. One is they will feel your love for them and their appreciation for them rather than your pity for them or your condemnation of them, which could, in fact, open the door to a complete reversal. It does happen. Spiritual healing is a reality. But it doesn't come from the place people normally think it does, because we're asking, trying to make something happen the way we want it to, rather than looking for the grace in the moment. So with the grace in the moment, it may just completely eradicate the symptoms. In either case, there will be a peace about the entire thing. And look, let's face it, we're all going to lose everything. You know, so somebody loses contact with this world a couple years before the body goes away. It's going to happen to every one of us. Nobody's exempt from that. You know, eventually it all just kind of goes, all right, I'm out of here. So it's not that big a deal, right? So just kind of really love them. Love what they actually are. Love the consciousness that is there. And recognize that that consciousness that is in them is in fact the same consciousness that's in you. And the world you're looking at is not the same as the world that I'm looking at, or the person sitting next to you on a bus is looking at. The world exists as an image in our minds. None of us is looking at things as they really are, only the sage. So I hope that answers you, Shania. Thank you for these great questions. How do we get in tune with this creation constant? This is from Remington Damper. What a name, Remington Damper. I mean, you need to be an author or something, right? Spy novels. The Spy Who Loved Me by Remington Damper. It's great. How do we get in tune with this creation constant? I'm not 100% sure what you mean by the creation constant, Remington. Could you, Remy? I think I've seen you refer to yourself as Remy. Can you give me a little bit more? I don't want to guess. I have some ideas about what you meant, but I'm not really clear. This creation constant. If you're talking about that creation is constantly creating itself, right? I'll take that up for a quick second here, because it's confusing to a lot of people, and it's really confusing to the ego, which really wants to have control over what it creates, right? I mean, I want to manifest what I want, right? This is just all happening. Well, the person you believe yourself to be, the image you hold of yourself, is also spontaneously being created and animated by consciousness. And that image you're holding of yourself is constantly being generated, is it not? Something happens in the environment. Your nervous system responds. It gets triggered. This is the way the nervous system works. Things happen in the environment. It responds. And then immediately a sense of identity arises to participate in the process. That's how it works. That sense of identity is as much part of the conditioning as the reaction. We believe so much that that's who we are, which is what makes it sticky. It's not who you are. You're the one that's aware of all of it. And as you begin to understand that, you see you don't need to control creation. You simply need to see it as it's happening. And you find that your nature, which is life itself, which is love itself, which is truth itself, isn't at war with what it's creating. And then the whole responsibility of making stuff happen and being the creator or even the co-creator of the universe, I don't know who you're going to do it with, you're the only one here, becomes no longer relevant. You see, the very universe is nothing but your nature, but you know that your nature is not just a limited person. Your nature is life itself. Now, okay, Mr. Dryfield. Remy did, it was about what you're talking about earlier, creation is constantly happening. How do we let the creation come through us? Excellent question. This is kind of the tantric path, right? How do we let it come through us? Well, it's always coming. The first thing you do is you recognize that it's always happening. It's coming out of your nature. You don't have to let it come through you, right? What we have to do is let go of the idea that somehow we're making it happen. That is an idea that has been projected on it. It's not real. It's not true, right? Now, it feels as if it's true because we believe it so strongly, and whatever we believe, you know, shapes our experience. Remy, that's all, folks. GP, what would you say is the quickest, best way to burn Vasasanas and dissolve old programming? That's all. Thank you. What I would say, it takes a deep honesty. If you don't know what a vasana is, those of you who may not be familiar, that's the Sanskrit word for what we know of in more Western thought as deep conditioning. I mean, so deep conditioning, deeply ground unconscious patterns that just don't seem to yield. Doesn't matter what you do, all the therapy and hypnotherapy and NLP and tapping and releasing, and it doesn't matter. And meditating to your butt falls off. Nothing moves these. Because they're so deeply ingrained. I call them energetic assumptions. They are more than just even the conditioning. They actually pass from lifetime to lifetime. It's proclivities that come with you. That said, there's no more substance to them, to that, than there is to a sore finger or some kind of little irritant that's here 1 minute and gone the next. It's just the amount of weight we put on it. So the first thing to do, the first thing I always teach is what I call the yoga of allowing. I used to have a course called Just Allow It. It's all now included in Inner Reconciliation, which you can learn more about at gpwalsh.com/IR. The yoga of allowing is simply a total switch in your energy that instead of starts fighting with these things, because you can't fight with them. To quote Muji, you know, to fight with this is like trying to stop the wind dressed as a kite. I mean, you can't. They're overpowering. So what do you do? Right? You question even say, how do I get rid of them? Well, you can't get rid of them. Right? Does that mean I'm stuck with them forever? No. You cannot push them away, because the pushing them away is actually feeling them. So how do you actually take the wind out of their sails? You turn towards them with complete and total acceptance. You open your heart to them. You totally accept that they're there. And I don't care how deep the pattern is, how far back it goes, how many lifetimes on how many planets. I don't really care. Whatever put this in place in the first place, this deeply, did so for a reason. Something in the environment triggered it so deeply, made it feel so threatened, that it got itself into a defensive posture and stayed there. The only way to alleviate a defensive posture that is caused by a life-threatening sense in an environment is to create an environment where there's no life-threatening sense. If you create an environment of pure, unconditional love, total acceptance, even if it just rips through your entire system and wreaks havoc, you say, okay, fine, do whatever you have to do. You have gotten to the point of complete and total unconditional love. That is the only way to undo them. In that environment, whatever energy is there is free to express itself. And trust me, grace is so brilliant. And the genuine energy of being is so intelligent that it will not kill the host in the process of eradicating the ailment. It won't traumatize you by alleviating your traumas, right? It knows exactly how much that can be taken. But allowing is the training I use in order to prepare people to be able to be with the sometimes very intense energies that come up. And I can speak from experience. It's the only way. It's the only way it can happen. And you'll find that when you do that, when you do just learn how to allow, and it's best to have a coach or a guide at first. I've got plenty of classes about it. It's such a shift in your perception. And it's so natural, because it's actually just connecting you back up to your own nature, which is totally accepting. Consciousness is totally accepting. It's totally open. It doesn't restrict anything, does it? I mean, by the time you react, it's already in, right? Consciousness is already aware of it, which means it's not restricting anything. It isn't arguing at all about anything. It's like your eye. Your eye doesn't filter anything out. If it gets to the eye, it gets in. Then the rest of you goes, whoa, I don't like that. It winces and things like that. But So, God, I'm getting a lot of questions here. So, Bill W. R. G. I'm grateful to not be working today and catching you live. Namaste. The most amazing teacher ever. Well, I don't know about that. There's some pretty amazing teachers out there. Let's see, another one here from Dryfield. I hope I'm reading that right. It's another thing. It isn't as good over the years. By not knowing anything, as soon as you need to know what is arising, you have halted the creative generation by fixing it into a concept. That's very true. Yes. Again, don't try to consciously, energetic, as an act of will, stop that from happening. Just watch it. Notice. Because it's a conditioned pattern. It's not something you can consciously control. You know, I mean, if you see something beautiful, there's going to be a second, which is just kind of, it just takes your breath away, right? No silence, no mind, no chatter. You're not even there. It's just the pure experience. You're one with the experience. And then immediately the mind starts speaking. And you're off on it because it's describing, because that's what it does. That's its job. There's nothing wrong with it. If it couldn't do that, we couldn't have these conversations. So it's not that it's a bad thing. It's just become habitual. It happens so fast that we go along with it and we don't realize there's some space there. We can have some space. So don't try to stop it like a sadhana, you know, like some kind of practice. I'm going to stop my mind now because it won't work. It worked. Yeah, it's like fighting the wind dressed as a kite. Instead, just be so deeply grateful for the fact that you noticed it happened. Because the moment you noticed that it happened, you're not in it anymore. You've stepped outside and you're looking at it. And then the desire will be, I want to be more spiritual. I want to be awakened. So I want to get rid of it. That's also being seen. That's also part of the conditioning that's been arising. That's just a different version. That's you, you know, 3.0, the spiritual version of you. Notice that's happening too. And it's all happening in front of this conscious awareness that isn't the least bit troubled by any of it. You know, a galaxy could explode and space is not the least bit disturbed. It actually doesn't even leave a footprint. You're the space. The more you are there, the less these things happening will have the impact on you, because you can't be impacted. You'll have no Velcro to which they can stick, which means they can come and go, and it's not a problem, which also means that the quality of attention that goes to them becomes more loving and accepting, which means that the character of them changes. They're not being energized by resistant energy, so they're not resistant. They have nothing to feed off of. Because remember, they feed off of you, not the other way around. You're conscious of them. They're not conscious of you. Okay, let's see. Wow. And, I'm doing okay on time. I need to move this mouse a little bit closer to me. I got to figure out some way to do that. Again from Shanika. I'm loving this. This is great. It's me again. I know my body is not me. I know that my mind is not me. And I know someone is watching everything within my body. So who understands these things happening in my body? Well, wouldn't that be you? I mean, who else is it? Is there somebody else in there? If so, can I talk to them? It's you, right? That's the thing is that habit of identifying with what you are experiencing is so deep. It is so deeply ingrained that the idea that we're watching it, we immediately go, who's that that's watching it? Your mind now is engaged, and it wants to find the one that's watching. You're the one that's watching. Who else would it be? Are there two? Is there another awareness that you, right? I mean, the buck has to stop somewhere, right? This isn't an infinite regression. Oh, that's watching that. Well, that's watching that. Well, that watch. It's not like two mirrors facing each other that go off into infinity. The buck stops here. And the buck stops with, I am having this experience. I'm aware of the body. I'm aware of the thoughts. I'm aware of the sensations. I'm aware of all the concepts that I have. I'm aware of the entire show. I am aware of. I'm even aware of being aware. But that last one, aware of being aware, that one's different. You are aware of yourself, and while your mind is looking for an object that it can associate with awareness, because it's convinced that awareness, your consciousness, the timeless, is an attribute of something. I mean, that's the view. That's the materialistic view, that it is an attribute of the emergent properties, the complexity of matter. So it's an attribute of this object, and that you are the object, and that consciousness is an attribute of that. But when you look, you find that all of that takes place within consciousness. So consciousness is the awareness. It stops there. You can't find something that is aware of awareness. It's simply awareness aware of itself. But it's not aware of itself. It is an object. Again, Muji refers to that as non-phenomenal recognition. It's different. You just know. If I ask you, do you exist? Are you? Everybody here would say yes. Right? And then immediately your mind would say, yeah, the body, the mind, and all of that sort of stuff. But if we dismantle that, we just go, but you still know that you are. Even if none of that was here, you still know that you are. How do you know? And this is really the essence of non-duality, the essence of coming to oneness. To see this, that this is awareness recognizing itself. This is self-awareness. This is self-realization. I am the knowing. I'm not someone who knows. The knowing and the knower are one. I am not a being that knows. Being and knowing are the same, Sat Chit Ananda. And we have just run out of time, and somebody just asked about a live call. Yes, there is. Make sure you're on my email list if you go to gpwalsh.com/SWG. You can register and you'll be notified, and it's got all the phone numbers and dial, everything you need to listen to the show. So I really want to thank you all for being here. As always, it's been great. If those of you would like to hang around on YouTube or Facebook, you're more than welcome. If there's some other questions, I'll be happy to take them. But I have to sign off from BBS Radio now. And I want to thank you all. Thank you all. Thank you. Until late next week.